Never stop learning. You never know it all. Never stop learning. A second one to me is never tell somebody that's not my job. Anything that needs to be done, you should consider it your job to do it.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Elizabeth Holtrup, and I'm very excited to be here today with John Snyder, who has a long and exciting career in banking and has agreed to share a little bit of his time and wisdom with us today. I'm going to start with a short bio and then we will get into the conversation. So John Snyder has served in the Texas banking industry for 55 plus years. He has spent 35 years with Shelby Savings Bank in Center Texas, including serving as their president and CEO and vice chairman and CEO for 24 years. He is currently serving as their vice chairman. John served 11 years on the Texas Finance Commission, including 3 years as chairman. He is a past chairman of the Texas Bankers Association. He has also served several terms on the Texas Bankers Association board and executive committee. He served 14 years on the American Bankers Association Membership Council and spent 6 years on the American Bankers Association Government Relations Council. He is currently serving as board president of the Center for Economic Development Corporation and has spent many years on local economic development and agricultural related boards. John, from reading this, I kind of think you've shaped banking in Texas from what I'm seeing. And I love to hear that. I love folks who devote their work and their life's calling to such a purpose that serving local communities through finance is close to my heart. So I really, really appreciate the time you're spending here with us. You've had such a long career in your banking, and you have helped shape a lot of developments that are close to the hearts of all of us as community bankers. So to start, I always like to just ask our guests to tell us a bit about themselves. Specifically, how did you get into banking, and maybe what is your favorite thing about working in this industry?
Well, it's interesting about how I get into banking. I graduated from Howard Payne in Brownwood, and Elaine and I got married that summer, but she had two more years of school to go.
Okay.
So I looked for around Brownwood for a job there and thought I'll spend a couple of years here. She graduates, then we will move somewhere and I'll figure out what I want to do long term. And 7 or 8 months after I started that job, the gentleman I worked for came to me and asked if we had thought about staying in Brownwood long term.
Oh.
And we really hadn't at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But he mentioned that a close friend of his had a small locally owned bank and was looking for someone in the accounting department. And if we thought we'd be interested in staying longer, then he would forward my name to him and with a favorable recommendation.
Okay.
So Elaine and I talked about it and decided, let's see what this looks like. So I interviewed and liked what I heard and wound up going to work for Roy Simmons there in Brownwood and spent 16 years.
And just a little bit of time.
Just a little bit. When I left, I was president and chief operating officer. And so it was an interesting time of learning. It was about $14 million when I started, so I had a chance to see all areas of the bank and have a chance to do a little of everything.
That is such a cool story. You know what's always fun to me is hearing people who got into banking. They kind of stumbled into it, or maybe they had a connection or a referral. That's how I got into banking. I was just looking for a desk job with good hours, 9 to 5, kind of. And my brother actually referred me to a local bank, and I have just adored working in banking for about 10 years since then. And I love hearing that, especially community banks. A lot of what they're looking for is to serve their community and hire locally. So that's such a cool story. So it's not necessarily that you were trying to get into banking, but banking got into you is what I'm hearing.
That's kind of the way it worked. I had never thought about banking.
I love that. Moving a little bit forward in your career, you were part of leadership at Texas Bankers Association at the time Compliance Alliance was formed, if I'm understanding that correctly. I would love to talk a little bit about this. So today, Compliance Alliance has Compliance Hub, including the hotline team, which I work on. We've got the Virtual Compliance Officer Division. We've got our newest division of Tailored Solutions. was not as complex to start with. I would love to talk through how you were there from day one. Can you maybe tell us about the early days? Like, how did this brainchild come to be? What part did you play in bringing Compliance Alliance to life?
Well, I kind of had the opportunity to watch it from the board of TBA board of directors point of view. And then my term as chairman was probably about 4 years into it. Okay. But the idea or the gist behind it developed after the passage of Dodd-Frank in 2010.
Yeah.
And Eric Sandberg was the TBA president at that time. And Scott ran a compliance hotline for TBA, managed Bank PAC, and several other legal areas that Scott was over. And Eric and Scott sat down talking about Dodd-Frank, because Eric's concern was this was going to be a regulatory, and I think tsunami was the actual word used. And the big banks had the resources to handle it, but the small banks, the fear was they would be simply overwhelmed and needed support of some kind to help them navigate this regulatory time that was coming. And I laughed when I talked with Scott about this the other day. I've heard the story before, but after their first meeting, Eric looked at Scott and said, "Okay, go figure it out." And that's what Scott did. And they met a couple of times over the next few months. And then I think about January of 2011, one of the monthly board conference calls, they brought it up, went over their vision for it, some preliminary plans and things they'd worked out, presented it to the board, and the board considered it. And I'll be honest, I wasn't sure what the board would think about it. It sounded good, but it sounded very aggressive and far-reaching.
Okay.
And the board was supportive and basically told them, go put a plan together on paper and have it ready for the next board meeting.
Moving quickly.
And they did that, and it was approved, I believe, at the March 11 board meeting. And things picked up and moved along really in a hurry after that. And I know that within about 3 months, they offered several banks the opportunity to sign up. I think it was a 3-year contract with so many months discounted for the early sign up to kind of test and help develop the product. And Shelby Savings was one of those first members. And so we've been a member from day one.
I love that.
One of the funny things about that time, Jeff Austin III was chairman. And he told Scott after the meeting, said, "You've got to have 18 banks signed up in the next 3 years or we'll have to pull the plug on this."
Okay.
Well, I think Scott had 38 banks in less than a year.
Wow.
So it didn't have any trouble making the numbers that we needed, and started moving. And the first idea was that it would support Texas banks.
Okay.
And that's where the focus was. But the word started spreading among the state banking associations and had a lot of inquiries. Well, in November of that year, the ABA convention was in San Antonio. During the convention, the state associations met to talk about Compliance Alliance and the possibility of expanding it into other states.
Okay.
And then that just kind of picked up and went from there. I think today, Scott said, we're in 49 states in D.C. And the only state we're not in is in Hawaii. And he tells me that TBA chairman keep encouraging him to let them travel to Hawaii with him to try to promote the banks in Hawaii.
I'm sure we'd all be happy to go as delegates if we
did. Hawaii, definitely,
John.
But and I think one of the questions some of us had earlier early on about expanding like that was about, you know, each state has, on top of the federal regs, has different state regs.
Yes.
For instance, Texas and Louisiana, we're right on the Louisiana border.
Mm-hmm.
But their laws all come from the French.
Yes.
Whereas Texas comes from Spain.
Yes.
So they're totally different.
Very different.
And, but the way it was developed and put out, Compliance Alliance would give the support on federal items, mm-hmm. not state items outside of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So setting it up that way, everything was consistent over mm-hmm. all customers on a federal basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has worked very well.
Mm-hmm.
And all. Mm-hmm. But one of the things about Compliance Alliance that's always gotten my attention, mm-hmm. each expansion has been based on a need. Somebody came to them with a need, they mm-hmm. spotted a need,
mm-hmm.
and it's just, that's the way it's grown. And I think that's one of the reasons it's been so successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Virtual Compliance Officer Program is a great example of that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a rural bank in East Texas that lost their mm-hmm. compliance officer,
mm-hmm.
and they called Scott, and I think Scott and one of the other Compliance Alliance officers traveled out to sit down, visit with them,
mm-hmm.
See how they could help. And the idea for the virtual compliance officer came out of that. And of course, now I think we've got about 125 banks participating in that program. So success breeds success.
It's incredible. And honestly, I love the concept of servant leadership. And what I'm kind of hearing is the whole heartbeat of Compliance Alliance and TBA's involvement with the formation and leadership is serving a need and serving banks so that they can better serve their communities. To me, that's the heartbeat of why I enjoy the work I do. No one's here trying to just puff themselves up or just, you know, do it for the sake of doing it. It's truly about working together to serve these, especially the community banking communities that rely on some of those Main Street banks. That's just something I will get on my soapbox about. And I love mm-hmm. that Compliance Alliance supports small banks and, you know, mid-size or community banks, especially to stay in the business and do good work. I am so excited also when I think about how TBA saw a need, filled a need, and then it spread to a national platform because of Texas's leadership and willingness to work on the national front. And I wonder if you maybe are willing to talk a little bit about how Texas Bankers Association kind of does that national work, because TBA is committed to serving Texas banks, but definitely takes a role nationally as well with some things like advocacy for regulatory concerns, that type of thing. How would you describe TBA's role with focusing on Texas, but really takes a national role as well?
Well, I think one thing that's allowed us to do that is the other state banking associations have learned to watch Texas and what we're doing.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And we have to be, or have had to be over the years, a little bit careful
mm-hmm.
that, because there are a couple of national trade associations.
Yep.
And at times there's been a little, I think, jealousy there, but basically, you know, we put products out there for our members, our Texas mm-hmm. members,
mm-hmm.
but we're open when the other associations see what we're doing and want to participate, and okay. not trying to compete with the national mm-hmm. trade associations or take away mm-hmm. from them,
mm-hmm.
but if the other state associations are coming to us with a need,
mm-hmm.
We support them. We try to help, try to work with them. And
that makes sense.
And I think that Compliance Alliance has really developed that way. But Texas is really a leader and sets a lot of trends in a lot of ways, and mm-hmm. is a very respected state association. Of course, it's the oldest and biggest. We're proud of that. But
reason to be proud.
We've had great leadership and great vision,
mm-hmm.
and then the staff at TBA, at Compliance Alliance, just the job everyone has done speaks for itself. And when others see that, I think they want to be a part of it. They see a service that can help them that's not available from other sources, and that opens the door then for us to step through.
Yep. No, and I like that. It's not that anyone needs to toot the horn or anything like that. The service speaks for itself, and I appreciate how you put that. Thinking through your long experience in banking and such an inspiration to people like me who does not have quite the same number of years you've clocked yet. I hope I'm going to get there. I'm hoping. Can you talk a little bit about maybe what are some of the experiences you find from your banking career that were most impactful looking back over? Maybe something that impacted you personally or was really pivotal in your career. I would love to hear some stories if you have anything you can share.
There's probably several. I think early on and during a lot of the 80s, I wound up doing cleanups, workouts, which was not one of my favorite things with the uncertainty and all you're dealing with. But it was an education looking at projects and big loans and things that have cratered going in. And I didn't go in and just, okay, let's get this fixed. We did that, but I also wanted to go back into the files and see if I could figure out what we missed or what somebody missed doing this. Where were the warning? What were the red flags that somebody didn't see?
Okay.
And I think that has been tremendously beneficial for me now the last 30 years or so, having that background sitting on loan committee and other things that, wait a minute, I've seen that before, and let's think about this. And so some things like that basically the experiences back there, some of the least fun ones, turn out to be the most valuable over time. I think my time on the Finance Commission, I served about 11 years. But seeing the regulators, especially our state regulator, from a different point of view, kind of the oversight there, understanding the pressures they were under, the audits they receive, and kind of seeing it from the other side a little bit, give a much better understanding of what's going on, of what they're dealing with, and understanding of what the examiners are facing from both sides, both from the banks they're examining and then the pressure they're getting at times, political pressure from behind them when things get rough. So that was pretty interesting.
Well, that sounds very, very interesting. Yeah.
And I'd say also say my time on the TBA board and going through the chairs, learn more about other banks around the state, some of the things different ones deal with. And then fortunately, TBA set up the past chairman's council where we meet quarterly the afternoon before the board meeting. And then the past chairman are invited to sit in on the board meeting that helps keep us up to date with what's going on and informed. And, once you've kind of been in a broader role like that, you sense a loss if you lose all your exposure to it because you're used to hearing more, seeing more things come through. And I think the past chairman really appreciate TBA's setting up the past chairman's council and the opportunities they offer us through that council.
That is really cool. And I didn't realize that's something TBA did. And I can only imagine, like you said, once you've had that scope and breadth of thinking about banking from that level of leadership, to kind of pull back after your term is over might feel, like you said, like a loss. Looking at all the leadership roles you've played, can you give any advice to bankers who maybe are interested in local leadership, not just in Texas, but, we have folks listening across the country who work in community banks. How can they get involved if they're interested in either shaping, work in their states or what are the best ways for them to get involved, whether it's their State Bankers Association or other leadership roles?
Well, I think one thing I have been blessed with was boards that felt like that education, mm-hmm. additional education was important, that being active in the industry was important, and being mm-hmm. active politically
okay.
was important.
Okay.
So our board stresses that. And so I think, you know, work with your board and help them mm-hmm. if they're not a board that understands that. Mm-hmm. Help them to see the benefits of that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then reach out to TBA, to the different organizations. Mm-hmm. Let them know that you're interested in serving on the council. Do your research. You know, we've got government relations. We've got our small bank group now that is working. So there's a number of different councils that are available. But let mm-hmm. people know that you are interested in doing things, and then show up mm-hmm. and participate and be active. And it's mm-hmm. important for the industry that our bank employees, our officers, and are active. I think mm-hmm. the number mm-hmm. I've heard recently is in Texas, there's about 250,000 bank employees.
Okay.
If we could get everybody active when we're writing letters to Congress, mm-hmm. when we're sending mm-hmm. emails, when we're doing bank pack, man, think what an army that would be with the influence
yep.
That we could have. And mm-hmm. the more people we get involved, the stronger mm-hmm. we're going to be.
Oh. I think that makes sense. And what I'm kind of hearing from you also is that some of the main themes are just being dedicated, doing your research, and then letting people know you want to be involved. What
yes.
I hear from bankers sometimes is they kind of say, well, you know, I'm not qualified, or what about me, or little old me? And I would personally, looking at your career and talking with you, I would say you're an extraordinary role model, but I'm not sure it takes an extraordinary person. It may just take a person who feels pretty ordinary, who's willing to do the work and put in the time and be committed to the cause. I struggle when I hear people say, well, I'm not qualified. I personally think, and from talking to you, the qualification is the willingness to do the hard work.
I think it is. People don't realize what they know from their day-to-day activities and doing their jobs and the things that they have learned that are just automatic to them.
Yep.
That, you know, in meeting with others and just listening, hearing, you know, you get so much out of the receptions and things like that.
Yep.
Visiting with other people and, well, we do mm-hmm. this that way. And have you thought about looking at it from this direction, and just mm-hmm. fresh ideas that you can come back with? And it's, mm-hmm. I think the key thing for the senior staff is encouraging their younger people.
Okay.
Getting them involved, letting them grow mm-hmm. up, being active. Mm-hmm. So when they move into these senior roles, they're already there. They're already active. They know what mm-hmm. it's about. They have mm-hmm. the contacts. You know, we started probably 25, no, closer to 30 years ago now, mm-hmm. Using Swigsby too.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. Majority of our officers now mm-hmm. have been through Swigsby or one of the graduate banking
mm-hmm.
schools.
Mm-hmm.
We've got someone that'll be going this year. Our board has attended several of the assemblies mm-hmm. that they have, which is a tremendous board educational opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But other things, just your CFO mm-hmm. Forums, your CEO forums, your chief mm-hmm. lending officer forums. There's so many areas that mm-hmm. people can get involved to learn mm-hmm. and to reach out, where if you run into a problem you haven't experienced before, well, here's a couple of people you know, you can call them, and maybe one of them has been in that situation, and how did they handle it? And build your networks.
That makes a lot of sense. And sort of what you're kind of touching on is the concept of mentoring the next generation coming up and giving them the opportunity to step into roles when it's appropriate for them as well. That makes such a difference. I mean, I've had some key pivotal mentors in my life where I wouldn't be, you know, doing the work I love to do without that hand up, where someone saw something in me and mentored me through it. And yeah, that it's priceless, that type of a professional relationship as well. To wrap up, I want to be mindful of your time. I know you're a busy gentleman. To wrap up, we always like to ask just generally, do you have a piece of advice for bankers right now? It's an interesting time to be in banking. And what is some advice you would give to folks listening in on the podcast?
Well, I don't think it has changed it's about the same thing I said for the video they made for the 50-Year Bankers Award. Uh-huh. But number one is never stop learning. You never know it all. Never stop learning. Mm-hmm. A second one to me is never tell somebody that's not my job.
I like that.
Anything that needs to be done, you should consider it your job to do it. And if you have the opportunity, be exposed to more areas, not just one narrow focus, but mm-hmm. get some exposure to different areas where you understand how everything interacts, the departments mm-hmm. relate to each other within the mm-hmm. institution, broaden your knowledge. But then when you have the opportunities for additional education and things, always take it.
I love that. Right after this, I'm going to write those things down on a post-it note. No, I'm serious that's splendid, excellent advice. Always keep learning. Always accept that there's something you can do. Don't pass the buck to others and keep a broad focus. I love that so much. Thank you so much for your time. This has truly, truly been fun for me to hear these, some of the memories and filling in the gaps that you've shared about some of the background. You know, working for Compliance Alliance, I feel so blessed. I love the work we do here, but I did not know some of that history that you just shared. And I appreciate your time. Anything else you would like to add to the podcast before we close out the episode?
I think that's pretty well covered. I'll just mention one thing. Charlotte Allen, our compliance officer, I sat down with her for a few minutes Tuesday to just ask what she uses. Uh-huh. You mentioned Compliance Alliance, and she just lights up.
Oh, I love that.
She talked about the online chat, how mm-hmm. fast the response is. It comes with a reference to the regulatory mm-hmm. area, the reviews, the checklist, and things like that. And I can't leave without giving her a compliment. She will be recognized next month as the, let me find my notes real quick, as the 2026 Bank Compliance Leader Award for the Texas region. So we have an outstanding mm-hmm. compliance officer, but mm-hmm. she truly gives Compliance Alliance credit for helping her to do her job and to be where she is at the current time.
I love that you brought her up specifically because I've interacted with her on the hotline. I've had the pleasure recently of meeting her in person at a training event. She is a phenomenal inspiration to compliance professionals and just such a credit to the industry. She spoke highly of you, John, so it sounds like the relationship is mutual. When I talked to her, we were talking about her work at your bank as well. But I'm so glad you brought up her name because not only does she deserve recognition, but also everyone serving in roles like her deserves recognition for putting in the daily work, just putting in the hard work to get the job done. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us, sharing your memories and your wisdom. I really, really appreciate it. Until next time, I'm Elizabeth Holtrup, and this has been your episode of Banking Matters.